Verifying credentials. Access granted.
Welcome to the vault. You are listening to the best of all of the above radio.
I got a trip to Vegas coming up in a couple of weeks. Just the earliest part of June, I'll be going to Vegas. And I was thinking about the things I'm going to have to do for this trip. We're going to Cirque du Soleil. We're going to a nice dinner beforehand. We're apparently, it's me, Charlotte's Web, and two other couples. And all six of us are in a text message thread, and they're talking about coordinating outfits. The women are all going to wear this color dress, and they want the men to wear this color or that color. And so my first thought was, who's got the money for me to buy another suit so I can actually color coordinate with you guys? But I got into the thought process of, oh crap, am I going to need to buy a swimsuit? Are we going to be getting in a pool at any point? I would assume Vegas hotels, some of them have pools. I know we stayed at the MGM Grand last time we went. And I don't think they had a pool. I'm sure some of them do. Probably up on the roof or something ridiculous like that. But I wondered, and this was partly brought on by me thinking about the stuff I'm going to have to bring to Vegas, but it was also brought on in part by listening to my single friends at work. There's one guy I work with. He's super gay, and happy to admit it. He calls himself Queen Bee and Diva and all sorts of terms that are theoretically thrown towards females to describe them. But he's single, and he was talking about how he's going to get ready to get back on to going to LA Fitness so that he can get his beach body back, and so on and so on. And this also ties into one of several ridiculously funny thought bubbles that Chris Rock put out when I saw him at Windstar Casino. When he said, if you're in a relationship, love hard. If you can't love hard, leave. But before you leave, make sure you're not ugly. You don't want to get out there and find that nobody wants you. Stand in front of the mirror, completely naked, and look yourself up and down and make sure that you got something that somebody might want if you go back out there. Now, I wasn't thinking about the what if I was single part. I was just thinking about, well, look at my body in the mirror and figure out if even the woman I sleep next to would want it. But I tied all of that together, and I've started to kind of wonder, and I'm going to put this up on Facebook in just a little bit. I would love to know if and when you stop caring about the beach body. There's an enormous difference in being healthy and having a beach body. Because I'll tell you what. When I started to notice people not caring as much, it was just maybe like 2 years ago. I was out randomly playing volleyball somewhere. Actually, it might have been 3 years ago at this point. I was playing volleyball with a couple of folks, and we were all some varying level of in shape. Some of us were round, and round is a shape. Some of us had flat stomachs. I'm sorry. Stomach. And so I kind of looked around, and some of them just didn't care. And then I went to, I think they're called Hawaiian Falls. It's basically just a water park where you take your kids. You don't want to make the investment of buying a pool or moving to a place that has a pool. So you bring them to Hawaiian Falls for the day. It's like $40. And I saw like some Rick Ross sized people with just guts hanging over their swimsuits. Like, we're talking like Big Pun before he lost weight, before he died. Like, lifted the belly and put it in her mouth like Akinelli. Like, that level of big. And they didn't care. They were walking around not giving a crap. And it's a huge transformation and change. I'm pretty sure I've told this story before. I remember quite strongly. I might have been 11 or 12 years old. And I went to the public pool with my cousins. It was over, like, it was a more city atmosphere. And I was a big kid. I was a very big kid around 11 or 12. Was I a fat kid? I suppose I was. Because I just remember standing with my swimsuit on and my big belly, and people were walking by and laughing, like pointing and laughing. And somebody standing behind me mentioned my man boobs. Like, this was, they weren't man boobs, they were just boobs because I wasn't a man yet. It was like huge. Like, it was body shaming at its finest. I was just a kid standing online that wanted to jump off the big diving board. Meanwhile, I'm getting laughed at. And my cousin, it was really cool. My cousin, 2 years younger than me, threw some kid up against the wall in the bathroom and was like, "I don't care. You don't talk about people like that." And the kid said, "What if you were that fat?" And my cousin was like, "It doesn't matter. You don't say that about people." Now, he never said that it was his cousin. He didn't mention that he had a horse in the race. He just mentioned, "You don't talk about that. You don't talk like that about people." Very cool. Made me feel very strong. Not strong enough. 2 weeks later, I went back to the pool and I wore a shirt. And nobody said anything. It was crazy. No one said anything. Now, fast forward to us being adults, people with jobs, people with drinking habits, people that like food more than body shaming. It was amazing to see people just not care. So I was just kind of curious. Is there a certain point that it happens for somebody, or a certain moment that happens? Do you get into a relationship and stop caring? Do you get a job and make more money than everybody else and stop caring? Did you go through a horrifying car accident and realize that life is too short to care what other people think? What was the moment that happened for everybody? Or do you still care about that beach body? Because what I have realized, and I could sit here and say this all day, and people love to laugh at this thought process, but for every 20 magazine ads there are about women and their hygiene or their body or their this or their that or their that, there's probably one man that feels that body concept problem. Because I know women open up the pages of Cosmo or Health and Fitness or insert magazine here with the hot girl on the cover, and women feel gross and women develop eating disorders as a result of it. However, you forget to mention that there's dudes out there looking at the pictures of Ryan Reynolds and Liev Schreiber and Ryan Gosling and saying, "Oh, crap." Or LL Cool J or Shamar, "You mother son of a bitch," more. People don't like to admit that men have body issues too. Meanwhile, we seem to be forgetting that as of this moment, I believe the average size of a woman's waist is 14. For those of you who don't know, if the average weight or if the average size of an American woman is size 14, that is the smallest size at Lane Bryant. That is the smallest size at Torrid. And so I know there have been moments, and probably as recently as, we'll say, 4 years ago, and this was what my most mentally unhealthy state. I had a bad bout of food poisoning. I ate some bad ribs. For those of you not in the know, I ate some bad ribs. And I was sick for a little over a week. Almost 10 days, truthfully. Couldn't eat anything. I think I basically had a steady diet of crackers and Powerade for about 10 days. Whatever I ate came right out. And I lost a lot of weight. Probably 10 pounds came off of me in 10 days. It was bad. Once I got back and felt better and had to buy new pants as a result, I was like, oh my God, this is the thinnest I've ever been. This is great. Not knowing that I lost the weight in an unhealthy manner and probably looked terrible as a result. And I know, at this point, I know that this was my most mentally unstable because I was not looking healthy, but I was thin, and I was like, oh, this is so much closer to what women want. Not stopping to think, dude, are you healthy? I've said over and over again, weigh whatever you want. It means nothing to me. So long as you are comfortable in yourself and you feel good about it. That's really the two biggest prerequisites I have to what you weigh is how you feel about it. How you feel about it, and are you healthy? That's it. Because Lord knows, if you look at the Ashley Grahams of the world, the Iskra Lawrence, I believe, is another one. Lucy Collette. You look at some of these names. None of these women are smaller than a size 12. They are all beautiful women. And now all of them are getting paid a boatload of money to be models on the other side of the pond. In England, in Australia, where women with curves are a little more lauded and a little more applauded. We're slowly getting in that direction here. But it's happening more so on that side of the pond. And I know I sound a little bit... I'm not sure how I sound right now. But I know I sound like something talking about body concept and beach bodies and all that. But what I'm trying to say is, for however many women that look like Anna Kendrick or Jennifer Lawrence or Emma Watson, there's probably 30 women that look a little bit more like Ashley Graham. And for every dude that looks like LL Cool J, that looks like Jesse Metcalf, that looks like Zac Efron, there's probably 30 or 40 that look like me. I mean, I'm not winning any beauty contests, but I'm not an ugly mug. I know that. I got that going for me. My buddy The Spark has been chiming in. Lots and lots of stuff going on here. And that right there, and The Spark just chimed in basically saying that she would pay big money to get back to a certain weight, which the weight that so let me just, I have been in studio with The Spark, and I don't know what she weighs now, but she is throwing out a number saying that she would pay big money to go back to 115 pounds. I would be willing to guess that that would not be a healthy weight for you, in particular, Spark, and a lot of women out there. But thank you for bringing that up, because that's one of the big reasons why some of these people on television look as good as they do. It's part of their job! It's part of their job! The legend that was told about LL Cool J, when he was the running back in Any Given Sunday, he was a big dude, duh. But then that's when he went on to the personal trainer thing and the nutritionist and all of that. And kind of like the rumors about how celebrities would get their stomach pumped or how they're gay or whatever. Numbers had been thrown out for months about how much money LL was spending on his personal trainer. But he had a trainer. He had a nutritionist. Somebody was telling him what to eat, how to eat, when to wake up, when to work out. Dwayne Johnson, the highest paid actor in Hollywood and the sexiest man in America. I think he got nominated that. Have you seen his diet? Have you seen that he wakes up at, I think it's 4:30 in the morning every day to put in his workout and start eating his 12 pounds of cod? The amount of discipline and the amount of time you have to give to working out and to being fit with a six-pack or huge biceps, do you understand how much time that requires? No human being with a job, children, and a relationship has enough time. Not to be that level. If it's part of your job, yes, I totally understand that. And if suddenly the Roman calendar or the sundial or Father Time himself extended each day by 2 hours so that we had 26 hours in each day, we all could be at the gym. And I'm not sitting here saying, don't go to the gym, it's not realistic. What I'm saying is, it's hard to find the time. It's hard to find the time when time is already of the essence. It's already hard to find the time when time is fleeting already. Life is so very much about spinning plates, about juggling activities. And something will always suffer. Something you want to do will always suffer, and you just have to figure out, is that suffering worth it? It's funny, because every time I start putting more concentration into the promotion of All of the Above Radio, the first thing that suffers is my time on the treadmill. And as soon as I get back on the treadmill, the first thing that suffers is my promoting of All of the Above Radio. Because my job, keeping my home clean-ish, and my relationship with Charlotte's Web, they stay on top of the priority sheet. Everything else comes in somewhere in second or third place. And that is just how it needs to be. That's not how it is. That's how it needs to be. People will always come first. People should always come first. And until this god-awful capitalist system of consumerism gets broken and thrown out the window, money is important. I hate how important money is, but boy, it sure is. Because if you want to do things, if you want to continue to have a roof, if you want to continue to eat the damn cod that leads you to the working out, you sure do need money. Boy, don't I hate it.
Did you know that All of the Above Radio accepts donations? Log on to fbrn.us and head for the All of the Above bio page. You can donate via credit card or even PayPal. What's the greatest nation in the world? Donation. All of the Above Radio thanks you for your support.
Which of Hank's co-hosts is the sexiest? Kid Comet, Blonde Ambition, The Spark, or All of the Above? Match code names to faces in the photo gallery by logging on to facebook.com/allofthe above radio. And I'm going with whoever I have the best chance with.
Thank you.
So I did want to give one more thought bubble on the 1975 concert. And this is going to be just a conversation that happened. This is one of the ongoing themes about All of the Above Radio. I told you a couple weeks ago about the Yonder Pouch for Chris Rock. And Dave Chappelle is doing the same thing. I put a link on Facebook.com/AllOfTheAboveRadio. Where you put your phone in a pouch, and it may very well ring, it may very well vibrate, but you can't get to it because it's locked, and you have to touch it to an electromagnetic device to open the bag back up. And Chris Rock is smart, Dave Chappelle is smart, because they don't want people on Facebook Live recording the whole thing and putting that $8,500 ticket out onto the ether. It's a great guard against your material getting leaked out. Because everybody's going to try to recite the jokes, and everybody's got a convoluted memory. Lord knows I could recite a whole bunch of them. They won't be perfect. They will not be spot on. And they're smart for doing that. They really are. And I wonder how soon concerts are going to start doing the same thing. How soon musicians are going to start doing that same thing. And it was crazy to look at the comments from Yonder Pouches, or from the Yonder Pouch videos, to look at the comments under, it's split right down the middle. You get some people saying, oh, this is such a great idea, that it'll cause you to be in the moment more, it's such a good idea, nobody's gonna be distracted anymore, blah, 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 blah. Now, the other side of it was somebody saying, man, keep your laws off my ticket. It's my ticket. I get to do what I want with it. I'm going to buy what I want with it. I'm going to do what I want. F you and your rules, man. If I'm going to the concert, I want to be on my phone, dude. You know what? Blah. And here's the other thing. This was the other thing that I didn't even bring into account. And I totally am mad at myself that I didn't think about this when it comes to the Yonder Pouches. What if an MF-er walks in there with a gun? Because Lord knows, concerts have not been safe these last couple of years. Concerts and clubs have not been safe. Now, it's been an absolute anomaly, but they haven't been safe. And so, yes, if something goes down, calling 911 would be great. You better hope security can handle it otherwise. But anyway, here was my thought process about the Yonder Pouch. Is that there was a moment when the 1975 was on stage, and they were just talking to the crowd, as the musicians tend to do. They were just talking to the crowd, and they said, okay, everybody, we're going to do something here. We're going to do something. No, we're serious. We're going to do something. I need everybody to put your phones away. Stop recording. Put your phones away. No, seriously. You over there. You there in the blue shirt. You there in the red. You with the hockey jersey on. Everybody, put your phones down. So people start putting their phones down. Okay, cool. And he says, I promise you, disconnect from your phone and connect with us up here. This moment that we're going to have together is going to be so much better than that video that you would have taken. And so most people acquiesced. I think I might have seen the song before. I think I counted maybe 35 to 40 cameras just in the general admission area ahead of me. The next song after he told people to put their phones down, I might have seen 3. Now, as soon as the song was over, everybody put their phones back up. But whatever. So the thing that really got me, it was great that the musicians are becoming more cognizant about it. And it seems like every show the musicians are mentioning, hey, put your phones down and let's be in this moment together. Nobody's getting mad about it yet, but I wonder if instead of getting mad, they're just going to start going to Yonder Pouches. I don't know how this is going to go. Concerts may very well be changing over these next couple of months, truthfully. And if I had any idea how to buy stock, that's what I would buy. The minute it goes public, I would drop my wallet on Yonder. I really would. Honestly. It's not insider trading, I don't think, because they're not public. So this was a moment that I absolutely loved seeing. And this is what I talk about when I talk about having an explosion of emotions. There was a girl. I'm sorry. No, she was a girl. She wasn't 18 yet. She's probably 15 or 16. Directly behind me and Barker's Beauty, it was stadium seating. It's a hockey arena. Allen Event Center is a hockey arena. So they cut off one side for the band. So we're standing up and turning to our left to see the band. So directly behind me, it's probably four girls, none of them above 17, probably 15, 16. They were young. You could tell they were young. And it was funny because the 1975 starts to play whatever song they're playing. And there's two girls turning into their friend in the middle saying, uh-oh, it's about to happen. Here come all the feels. And I was like, what? And so, song plays. Good song. It's a ballad of sorts. It's not an interlude. It's not like when 21 Pilots did Goner about the freaking person dying from cancer. It wasn't that low-toned, but it was a ballad of sorts. And the song ends. Everybody's cheering. And the girl behind me is crying. She is wiping her tears and she says, that song gets me every time. And her friends are bagging on her for dropping tears. I turned and I high-fived her. I said, hey, right here. That's how you're supposed to do concerts, right there. And then I turned around again and I said, and that was a song they said, no phones. Nobody recorded you crying. It didn't happen. I've talked about this with you guys over and over and over again. The spontaneous explosion of emotions is one of the greatest things to happen at a concert. And see, that girl, all of 15, 16 years old, already feeling emotions from the music, that's one of several reasons why musicians make music. I would be willing to guess, I am not a musician, but I would be willing to guess that you make music to connect with people on that level. And see, that girl and me, we are spirits of a certain fire, because I'm so happy to say I have a very short list of songs that have caused me to tear up as they were playing. On Call, I can't remember all of them, but I know the first time I heard Lazy Eye from Silver Sun Pickups, that brought a tear to my eye. Pretty close to every time Group Love sings Slow in concert, it brings a tear to my eye. For the sheer nostalgia of it all, I teared up during SWV. I hugged my sister with tears rolling down my face, and she thought I read a text that somebody had died. This cold-ass woman was like, what's wrong? Are you okay? And, let's see. Possibly the first time, or at the Unplugged show for Breaking Benjamin when they did Breath. I lost it a little bit. There's a very small list of songs that when they have been done live, I had to wipe tears off my face. Happy to admit it, and I'm proud to admit it. Truthfully. Those are the kind of people that are those are my people.
That's right, you heard correctly. All the Above Radio is now on iTunes. Go to the iTunes store, search for All the Above Radio. and listen to your favorite podcast from your homeboy Hank Thorpe and All the Above Radio. Now on iTunes, check it out.
If you were listening last week, we had just a very quick preview. Last week's show was a very full show and a very good show. I didn't get to tell you much about the fact that I was going to Las Vegas. But I'm already there and back again, as Chris Daughtry would say. It was a lightning bolt-style trip. Charlotte's Web and I left Saturday morning about 11 o'clock. And we got back just yesterday at time of live recording, or Monday morning for those of you listening on iTunes or Podomatic. We got back Monday morning, right just before noon, which most people said, oh, that's about as much time as you need in Vegas. This is the first, well, actually, it's the second time I've been to Vegas, but it's the first time where I genuinely said, I could have stayed another day. And maybe that's because I left a little bit early. Maybe that's why I was left wanting more. We'll get to Las Vegas itself and the trip itself in just a little bit, but I wanted to go ahead and add Carl to my crush list. He is in somewhat exclusive company with the likes of Chris Hemsworth and Clay Matthews of the Green Bay Packers, not the Clay Matthews before him. But I have been in the restaurant business for a long, long time. And I have to make sure I have to make sure I don't do the Mike Francesa thing and tell you over and over again that I've been in the restaurant business for X amount of time or that I'm this many years old. I'm trying to avoid the proverbial bragging montage. But I've been in the restaurant business a long time, and there are certain types of bartenders and people by extension, but there are certain types of bartenders that I take a particular shine to. And I know the kind of bartender I am. I am a much better complimentary piece than star of the show. I can selectively talk to people. I can selectively have a good time, but I have to feel comfortable, and my character has to be switched on. On a day where I am not in character, doesn't work. On a day where I'm not switched on, it doesn't work. And if it's a topic that I couldn't care less about, it doesn't work. And we'll skip ahead just so I can keep talking about Carl, the newest addition to the All of the Above Radio Man Crush list. After several hours of sitting at the roulette wheel, the blackjack table, so on and so on. This trip was not about me. It was not about anything I wanted. It was about our friend the Kingpin's birthday. But as Charlotte's Web and I were driving in, the Uber was bringing us to our hotel. We passed the Miracle Mile shops, and I see, like a beacon at night, I see a local brewery. Not the actual brew pub itself, just one of their little satellite stops. But I see a local beer, and I said, I want to do that at some point before we leave. And to his credit, the Kingpin, the birthday boy, said, hey man, didn't you want to get a beer? And I was getting a little tired. I was getting a little cranky because I was hungry and everybody was winning money. And I was like, eh, whatever. And finally, they're just like, dude, no, let's go get a beer, seriously. So we walked across, up over the bridge, over the terrifying 6-7-12 lane road that is the Las Vegas Strip. And we cross over into the area where the Miracle Mile is, and we walk into Sin City Brewing. And it's tiny. There is 5 types of beers, maybe 15 to 20 different types of liquor. They are carrying the bare bones stuff. There might have been 12 bar stools and possibly 3 tables. Very, very, very teeny tiny place. They didn't even have a public bathroom. And the NBA finals are on. Oakland is totally destroying Cleveland. To the surprise of very few. LeBron needs help, by the way. And so we sit down. Charlotte's Web, Kingpin, yours truly, we sit down. And of course, this is where I take center stage. Hey, man, what's the best beer here? Yeah, can I get a taste of that? So here I am, like a snob who thinks he knows something. May not know something. I take a sip of a couple of things and all of that, and my lovely lady, she likes sours. She takes a taste of that sour. She says, oh, yes, I'll take one of those. And the Kingpin, he gets one too. And so I'm drinking a dry Irish stout. No surprise there. So the three of us are just sitting here. We're chatting, enjoying the fact that it's not loud in the casino. It's not smoky. It's very kind of a small, intimate kind of a... It was just a nice little scene and a change of pace, most definitely. Little did we know we were about to get shanghaied by a local magician who was pretty much the greatest icebreaker to the bar itself, the bartender, and the people in the bar. He was good. And if he's not too big for his britches, I will try my best to get him on these very airwaves. We exchange a little bit of information, and that would be amazing to get him on. You can actually look him up. Apparently, he was on America's Got Talent, and he went super-duper viral. Howard Stern loved him. I believe his name is Smoothini the Ghetto Houdini. Feel free to look it up as soon as the show's over. But as we were sitting at the bar, having our beers and a shot, the bartender, he ended up becoming this very interesting, multi-layered person. First and foremost, he looks like every bro you see on the Vegas Strip walking with 9 other dudes. He's a good-looking guy. He is a muscular guy. He's probably wearing a medium where he should be wearing a large, but it's cut in all the right places. So already, you know, the drunk females that are walking up and down the strip are throwing themselves at him. And then he proceeds to talk, and this is what started all of it, is you're all familiar with the six-pack, the plastic six-pack holders that ever since you were a child you've been told, cut them so that the tuna don't choke. And so my lovely lady says, oh, you care about the tuna fish? She says, dude, I couldn't give a rat's ass about the tuna fish. What I do care about are sea otters. They are possibly the cutest thing in the world. And I just said, well, that was very multi-layered of you. And he goes into this long thought bubble about sea otters. I don't know that I have ever heard, and he proceeds to say, if you don't care about sea otters, you're a terrible person or you're ignorant. I said, well, does that mean I'm both? And within 15 minutes, he goes from talking about how much he cares about sea otters and then goes into their reproductive habits and talks about how the cutest animals in the wild are usually the biggest douchebags, talks about what dolphins do to children. And I would have thrown in what ducks do to other ducks, but I figured just sit back and let him go. And then he ended up parlaying into talking about foreign policy and why President Trump is a good idea in the hopes of bringing this country back to a center versus staying too far to the left or going this or that or whatever. And then somehow was able to work in conversation about foreign policy, protests, Syria, and father's defense of children. It was absolutely fascinating to see. And once again, this is us as human beings, and most notably as Americans. We are very quick to put what we find as to be square pegs into square holes. We give people categories, and it makes us feel better. It makes us feel comfortable when status quo continues. But this guy, Carl, he looked like a bro, but then was one of the more intelligent, self-aware bartenders I've seen in a very long time. And he did something that most bartenders are told not to do, is he talked politics, and he talked a lot of politics. You are instructed, verbally and non-verbally, to avoid talking about politics because you have no idea which side everyone is leaning on and how it will affect your money. And it was funny because at one point, There was a kingpin, the magician, the bartender, yours truly, Charlotte's Web, and some dude from London. And everybody is locked up in this conversation about, oh my God, Trump is awful, but it's amazing, and I hope he stays because this country needs to be put back to right, and he's the one to do it by being so terrible. Meanwhile, to the right of us, there's, and once again, this is stereotypes, there's an old, bald, white dude who is sitting deadpan the whole time as he's drinking. And some part of me just hoped he was watching the game really intensely, but the other part of me figured, ooh, he's a Trump supporter and he is not digging on these words at all. You're instructed not to talk politics because you don't want people to feel a certain way about you and have it affect your dollars. He didn't care. He just did not care. And it was really very refreshing to see how little he cared. And a couple weeks ago, I was talking to you guys here, alloftheaboveradio.com, feel free. I believe it was the episode where I started the show by talking about Bad and Bougie. If it doesn't interest me, I have no knowledge of it and really just am not crazy enough to talk about it. I try not to talk about things I don't know about or don't have a frame of knowledge about. And it was amazing to see this man have control of the room in a comedic way, in a political way, in just a very charismatic way from top to tail. It was really very impressive, and it was the perfect change of pace from hard drinking of liquor and hard gambling. It was a nice change of pace in so many ways. It all came together to create a great feeling and a great atmosphere and a great mood. It was just a really good way to offset what had already happened during the trip. And I was a little bit further into the alcohol than I would have liked to be when I said thank you to the magician for the time he gave us. And I was a little far in when I decided to talk to Carl about how badass I thought he was. Oh, and he was in the Air Force for 9 years, by the way. So he defended our freaking country, too. So I shook his hand and said, dude, you are a phenomenal bartender. He says, really? I thought I was just about a step above mediocre. Which is something I would say, by the way. That was very good on him. Like that, just thank you for the experience. Totally appreciate it. And you know me. I don't love saying second goodbyes. I hate doing the hug and then we walk to the same elevator. Or we hug at the doorstep of the grocery store and then we walk down the same row. I hate second goodbyes. But we all did our handshakes, and we left, and Charlotte's Web was like, I'm buying you a shirt. You really like the shirt. I'm buying you a shirt. So we went back in. The shirts were badass. She wasn't wrong. I love the shirt. I can't wait to put it on. I won't make it look as good, but I can't wait to put it on. And this morning, as Charlotte's Web was dropping me off at my place, she said something really very brilliant because she knows I was kind of gushing over Carl. And she said, one thing you got to remember, and she was trying to boost me up a little bit. She says, one thing you got to remember is that is a really little bar that he's got control of. He's got just a few tables, 5 taps, and not much alcohol. No food, barely a bathroom to be had. He doesn't have nearly as much to do. So he can spend more time with his personality. Which is absolutely true. He may very well randomly take a vacation to Plano, Texas. Highly doubt it. And he may accidentally walk into the place I work. Highly doubt it. And he may see me working the service well, talking to 9 or 10 bar guests and taking care of 3 tables. Meanwhile, picking up the slack where other employees are lacking. And he might be like, damn, dude, you cover so much more ground than I do. You're pretty amazing at your job. Now, the chances of him making a pilgrimage to Plano, Texas versus me making another pilgrimage to Las Vegas, you just take those chances and just put them where you think they go. You'll probably be right. But I know for sure that that's how you really quickly get put onto my, not only my man crush list, but I'm going to tip you really astronomical list. Those are the moments that stay with you. And the first Uber driver that we had when we got off the plane, and Carl, the bartender, and Anna, the blackjack dealer, those three people have something in common. Is that their personalities were what was the most memorable. My Uber driver, whose name I don't know right now, but I could pull it up. Thank you, Uber. He just had a really good personality. He was the perfect welcome wagon to bring us into the hotel. And Lord knows, that was the cleanest car I have ever sat in for an Uber. It was unbelievable. It was like it had just been detailed that morning. Which really, that's part of how you get 5 stars. Truth. Really. And Anna, the blackjack dealer, for whom I became a little bit of a stalker. My best luck at the blackjack table was with Anna. And every time she got up and Mei Hua showed up after her, I started to suck. So I'd get up off the table as soon as somebody else came around, but I'd take another lap and there Anna would be. And I'd sit down and I'd make more money. I liked Anna. And she had good personality. Even though that bitch told me every now and then, well, the book says that you need to hit here. All right, I'll hit. Oh, that's a 7, 22, sorry for your luck. Not her fault, but still. My first Uber driver, Carl the bartender, Anna, these were personalities that created the memories. Because it's not always the parties. It's not always the show. I mean, for God's sakes, I saw Cirque du Soleil. I spent $150 on a Cirque du Soleil show. I haven't talked about it yet, and I don't know that I will. I mean, well, a little bit, but only a little bit. But those are the kind of things. The personalities are what set things apart. And Anna, my first Uber driver, and Carl, the bartender at Sin City Brewing on the strip by the Miracle Mile, those are the people that helped make this a good trip. And Carl is officially on my man crush list. Not gonna lie.
Hank Thorpe and All of the Above Radio will be right back after these messages, so don't go anywhere. It's the Emperor. Hank told me to tell you not to touch that dial, so don't touch that dial. And if you touch that dial, we're gonna have problems, and you don't want no problems, man.
Did you know that All of the Above Radio accepts donations? Log on to fbrn.us and head for the All of the Above bio page. You can donate via credit card or even PayPal. What's the greatest nation in the world? Donation. All of the Above Radio thanks you for your support.
You want to get connected with the legendary Hank Thorpe? Here's how you do it. Facebook.
Facebook.com/AllOfTheAboveRadio.
Twitter.
@HankToldYouSo.
Pinterest, SoundCloud, and iTunes.
Just search for All of the Above Radio.
Email.
AllOfTheAboveRadio@gmail.com.
And if you're old school and you want to talk to the sexy son of a gun, give him a shout at the studio.
214-717-4678.
just like a tourist in the city you were born, then it's time to go. And define your destination. There's so many different places to call home. 'Cause when you find yourself a villain in the story you have written, it's plain to see. Sometimes the best intentions are in need of redemption. Would you agree? If so, please show me.
Verifying credentials. Access granted.
Welcome to the vault. You are listening to the best of all of the above radio.
This from The Mirror, which is... I seem to find a lot of stuff from British tabloids for my material. First Western sex doll brothel where customers can fulfill their wildest fantasies for 100 euro an hour. Credit goes to Chris Kitching of Mirror. Let's see here. The first sex doll brothel in Europe, and possibly the first in the West, allows men or women to live out their wildest fantasies with the perfect submissive. For as little as 100 euro an hour, customers can choose from one of four busty and flexible silicone dolls and request that they be dressed in whatever sexy outfit they prefer. Made from thermoplastic elastomer, not far from silicone, I would assume, the realistic dolls have three orifices that can be moved into different sexual positions. The brothel is run by Lumi Dolls. The brothel run by Lumi Dolls is located inside a flat in Barcelona, with the firm assuring that clients that the 90-pound dolls are properly disinfected before and after every use. So, for those of you who are not familiar with the TV show Strange Addiction or have never watched the 45-minute documentary on YouTube, I haven't. For those of you who have not watched Howard Stern in the last 20 years on E! Network, Real Dolls, Lumi Dolls, all of these, they are, if you've ever walked into a sex store, a novelty store, a cake topper dispensary, you walk in and you see the fleshlights. You walk in and you see the vag molds, the butt molds. These are basically a porn star sat in a pool of rubber, and they made a cast of her vagine, and now they sell it for like 40, 50 bucks, maybe more, I don't know. Never had one. And it's basically, now you can stick your what have you into her whatnot, and it's like you're doing a porn star, except all it is the cutout of like a little bit of the legs and some of the butt and some of the front. But that just wasn't enough. Some company, and this is yet another, damn it, why didn't I think of this first? Some company decided, let's take the female sex mold and the mannequin and make it one. So here we have Lumi dolls and real dolls where it is a 100% silicone woman. Where it is a woman, eyes, face, mouth, nose, lips, top, bottom, front, back. It is a 90 to 100 pound woman, fully customizable to whatever hair color, whatever facial features, whatever race, whatever skin tone you want. And if you've ever, just type in my strange addiction real doll, or I love my doll, or something to that effect. There are people that have bought these dolls because it is the pinnacle of sexual pleasure. They've got a mouth, they've got a front, they've got a back. And all of them are used for your pleasure. And so, from what I can tell, these real dolls, these Lumi dolls, once upon a time were brought to light for men who found themselves awkward, who had been hurt by too many women, or let's just be honest, have some kind of a psychological issue where they have multiple personalities or multiple conversations in their head, and they can create a story for this silicone woman. I watched a little clip earlier today as I was researching this here topic, and there's a guy who had 8 real dolls in his home. And for his birthday, his new girlfriend sat at a dinner table with him and 2 of the real dolls. And there are men that treat these women as if they were their real-life partners. They can't talk, they are not living, but their skin feels real. Obviously, their vagine feels real. This is taking the "it's still real to me" pro wrestling and just taking it to the 20th level. This is creating a story of your own, creating a scenario of your own, a fantasy of your own, and personifying it in this silicone, elastane, plastomer, whatever the hell that was called, doll. Which, it's a lot of money to buy one. They're very expensive. And the idea of using that as your masturbatory tool, that's a lot of damn money, dude. That's a lot. That's a lot of money. And I understand that for a long, long time, they were in the shadows. People lived in their homes with them and didn't bring them out. And then people started carrying them outside and acting as if it was their significant other. And now we've come to a point where a human brothel isn't enough. Now we have brothels with real dolls. And now, let me just go ahead and say, I am once again, now I'm looking at thesun.co, another British tabloid, by the way. They have pictures of the dolls. They have pictures of these dolls that you can go to at this brothel in Barcelona. They have Katie, who is your typical blonde porn star. Big pouty lips, big old honking yeets, and you can tell her nipples are hard as rocks through this white t-shirt she's wearing. And then you have Aki. She is a blue-haired Japanese anime-style female with, once again, big honking yeets, and she looks like she's fresh out of a Japanese movie where she was wearing cat ears and had a sword come out of her leg and she just killed somebody. And then there is Lisa, described as African, with curly blonde hair and slightly dark skin, looking kind of like a little darker toned Mariah Carey. I find it unbelievable that... Okay, I don't find it unbelievable because it's hard to not... It's hard to be surprised by anything in this world, but I'm a little bit surprised that real doll brothels now exist. You could bring... And financially, I understand it. Because a real doll can cost anywhere from $4,000 to $8,000. So instead, you go to Barcelona, you take in a fantastic vacation in Spain, and then you spend 100 euro on a... And then you spend 100 euro on a female. I mean, it's cheaper. I totally get that. Totally get it. But of course, the overthinker in me, the first thing I thought was, well, you say they're properly disinfected, but what are you doing? I mean, is this like a bowling alley where overnight you gotta like disinfect and soak them? Like, how do they get clean? You can't just Is this like LA Fitness where there's the one overnight person that's wearing the hazmat suit and cleaning the sweat off all the benches? I mean, is there some dude behind this brothel in Barcelona wearing a hazmat suit and all he's got is a hose in one hand and like a torch in the other and rubbing alcohol? Like, oh, boy. I understand that whatever it takes to make it in this world is what you do. I have said that over and over and over again, and I don't want to judge, but I do want to question. I do want to question this. I have no issues with brothels in general. I have no issues with prostitution, like I said, over and over again just in these last few minutes. I think it should be legal. I think it should be regulated. I think the girl should get some form of benefits, be they medical, whatever. And once again, there is always a tinge of jealousy in some of the things I bring up. Because truthfully, I live in local DFW, and this is something that could be done in local DFW. It's not like you're really hurting anybody. It's not a strip club. It's not like you even would get a liquor license. All you would have to do is invest in the real dolls and whatever and whatever disinfecting products and rent out some space and sheesh and buy some outfits. Just go to Forever 21, order New Fine Arts, there's your plug, and buy some outfits. I'm a little annoyed that I didn't think of it, but I'm also just weirded out a little bit by the idea that real dolls are now brothels. Real dolls, just as themselves, I found strange. For whatever drought I was in, for whatever thoughts I had about legal prostitution, I still never stopped and thought, man, $6,000 on a 5'8" redhead with double D's that isn't real sounds like a great idea. Never done that. Never. And I understand, and see, what's going to happen is sooner than later, we're going to get to that spot where somebody interviews, where they interview somebody, and they say, well, it was amazing. I went in there, I went into a little private room, I told them to have her wear a teacher's outfit, and she had a ruler in her hand, and I was able to perform the scenario that I wanted. At one point, we're going to get an interview where somebody says it's the greatest experience they've ever had. Once upon a time, I joked This is years ago, ladies and gentlemen. I have these last few months, I've had to throw this disclaimer out a couple of times. But when I was younger, I used to jokingly say, when people used to say to me, Hank, what kind of girl are you looking for? I used to jokingly say, the kind that doesn't talk back. That used to be my joke about the perfect woman. So, once again, I understand if you have a strong imagination, if you have a strong sense of fantasy, and you don't want something or someone to ruin it, I get it. If you are an awkward human being, if you are socially inept, if you are, for lack of a better word, if you are socially soft, if you're not a strong enough person to say what you want or be assertive, I understand. You can get henpecked by a relationship or otherwise, just people on the street. I understand that you can get taken advantage of, that you can be talked down to, that you could feel like less of a man, or less of a woman for that matter, because there are male real sex dolls now. I understand that, and I have joked over and over again that when I was younger, that I wanted a girl that didn't talk back. And this is like people that tell you that, hey, don't talk bad about weed until you've smoked it. Don't knock it till you tried it. Don't say you won't go on a roller coaster just because it looks scary. Give it a try. Maybe it's your new favorite obsession. Somebody may very well say to me, dude, you have no idea what it's like to create the scenario in your head of what you want. And I'm happy to admit, and Chris Rock said this, so it's not like I'm unearthing any new secret about me. Chris Rock once said, your man has been watching porno since he was 12 years old, and he wants to live some of those fantasies before he drops dead. That's true! That's true for every single man in this world. We all have some sick stuff we would love to live out. And I guess, there's a scene in the movie Analyze This where Robert De Niro talks about his wife and then his girlfriend. And Billy Crystal splits. He says, wait a minute, you have a girlfriend? He says something to the effect of, yeah, you expect my wife to kiss her kids with that mouth? Or something to that effect. Basically saying that the mistress was there to do the filthy stuff while the wife was there to be the provider. I feel bad for people that are paying money in this brothel in Spain or buying a real doll and having it customized and delivered. I feel bad that they couldn't find it. But here's where I flip the coin. I bet you some of those cats feel bad for me. Because they're just like, oh, you're still trying to make it work with a human being? How's that working out? Are all of your fantasies being realized? Is she everything you ever wanted? I really do need to find somebody who goes to one of those brothels. I want to ask them, dude, what's it like to go to Barcelona, pay the 100 euro just to get into the room, and then pound out a piece of silicone? What is that like? What is that like? I don't know. I don't know. I mean, anybody that has watched porn in their life theoretically wants a little bit of verbal or sound or breathing feedback during the act of sex. So laying the hammer down on a piece of silicone, a piece of plastilin, elastane, I don't know what the heck it's called anymore because I'm not looking at the article. How, I don't know if that sounds, I don't know. Because part of the enjoyment of the act is the verbal confirmation of just how good you're giving it to them. But then again, that's, I suppose, what works for me. And works for a lot of other people. To just blindly, not blindly, but to... Hold on a second. We're getting more instant feedback in on the Facebook Messenger. And see, this is what happens when I don't look at the feedback at the same time the messages come in. I just got a hella side eye from Rogue Leader. I don't remember what I said. That's partially my fault, because once I start getting into my conversations with you guys, I kind of lose track of the world, so unfortunately I don't remember what I said for you to give me the side eye. like the meme, the African kid that gives you the side eye, looking like a modern day version of Arnold Jackson when he does "What you talking about, Willis?" from Different Strokes. All I'm saying is, as much as I jokingly wanted a woman that doesn't talk back, you want a partner, a verbal, a physical, a mental, a metaphysical partner. But my imagination is also not strong enough that I could just create my life story and a doll's. That just sounds like a lot of work. I mean, yes, I understand. I talk to myself. I'm doing it right now, if you really want to get technical. I'm talking to myself right now, but never have I ever wanted a fake woman that I could have conversation with. Whew. I really do want to interview somebody that goes. That would require me to learn Spanish and or Portuguese and to go to Barcelona. Just stand outside with a camera. Watch them wear the trench coat, cover it up. Because they don't want their wife to see what filth they just did. Or it's like a whole bunch of frat bros that one dared the other and the other dared the other and nobody backed out. Like a much more expensive version of getting a tattoo. Oh, God. The possibilities and the thoughts and the questions are just endless. They really are. They just are. They're just endless. These are stories that I find absolutely fascinating, and I understand. I could be more of a more political person. All of the above could be a more political podcast. But I'm so proud of the fact that that a small number of you come here because you don't want politics. And you don't want me to talk to you about politics. I think it's way more fun, and it really does fit the idea of All of the Above Radio being escapism if I'm talking to you about Lumi dolls in real dolls. That's what I think. I hope you think the same thing. You're welcome to tell me.
Are you trying to bring your new business to the foreground? Are you ready to take your product or service to the next level? Do you want to span the whole world in less than 60 seconds? Then it's time you started advertising on All of the Above Radio. We employ the best in writing, voice, and production talent. Your spot will be informative, professional, and memorable. And since we broadcast over the internet, you have the potential to reach more than just one market. This space is yours for the taking. For questions on ad rates and packages, email Hank Thorpe at alloftheaboveradio@gmail.com.
Running out of faith. Be careful who you tell. I'm running out of faith. Be careful who you tell.
him a check. That's what I offer the bridge. The cap I'll move you a town.
So Barker's Beauty and I are chatting and talking and laughing and having a great time with the music in the background. And then after the show was over, the four of us, we went to just one of the bars nearby. We were up at the Allen Event Center, so you can walk right outside, turn right or left, and there's bars right there. So we just went into the nearest bar, had a couple of beers, and just chatted some more. And we chatted about work and about the family and how the babies are doing and all of that. And I joked with Charlotte's Web after it was over. They left. I walked over to BJ's to get some dessert and let the buzz wear off. And I told Charlotte's Web, I said, well, the show was good. I didn't know as much of the music as I would have liked. I didn't study hard enough. Barker's Beauty and I chatted a lot. So basically, I spent $60 to have friendship time with Barker's Beauty. Not including the beers I paid for afterwards, because I got two rounds of beers, whatever. So I started thinking about that and saying, you know what? That, unfortunately, once you become an adult, that's really kind of a lot of what you do is you have to set up a time, and there's a reasonable chance you got to spend a certain amount of money to hang out with your friends. In just a few months, and now I have expensive friends, and I have friends that aren't so expensive. My buddy Young Buck and his wife Jaquan, I could tell them, dude, meet me in Charlotte's Web at Shell Shack. We're all going to sit and have butter running down our arms and eat some seafood. Doesn't cost much. Barker's Beauty, I don't get to see her other than a couple of concerts, so whatever the concert cost, that's how much I paid to spend time with her. My more expensive friends, the JT and his wife, the model, my buddy Kingpin and his wife, and Dominican, and yours truly, Charlotte's Web, the six of us, we're going to Vegas. It's the Kingpin's 40th birthday. So his live-in wife, and Dominican, she wants to do it big, so she's taking him to Vegas. We're going to a Cirque du Soleil show. We're going to an expensive restaurant in Vegas. And whatever else they want to do. And of course, the JT is talking about finding a club that does bottle service. These are friends I get to see probably 3 to 4 times a year. At their holiday party. fantasy football draft day and insert somebody's birthday here. And at the end of this fantasy football season, the 2016 season, I kind of looked at my god-awful performance. Three teams, none of my teams made the playoffs. And I was feeling really down, feeling a little bit sorry for myself and disappointed in my performance. To the point where I said, I don't know if I want to play fantasy football anymore. I don't know if I enjoy this anymore. I don't know if I have the same fire. I don't have the same feeling that I used to about fantasy football. And then I stopped and I said, crap. The day of the draft for probably 8 to 9 years now has been one of the most fun days of the year. And it's a day that I look forward to because it's a guaranteed day that me, the JT, and the Kingpin spend together. We sit in the JT's media room with his big computer, my laptop, and the Kingpin's laptop. And we get together, and we pick up pizzas, we pick up wings, we eat and we chat for an hour and a half beforehand about strategy, about who wants to draft what, how's everybody been, and then it's draft time. So we're sitting at the computer for 3 hours, 4 hours, doing the draft, having a good time, making fun of everybody's picks, making fun of each other's picks. And it's just so fun. And then inevitably, after the draft is done, we talk for an hour about everybody's team, who we think is going to be dangerous, who we think is going to be a crap team. And then it gets into talking about everybody's lives. And it's amazing. And part of me spending $400 on that fantasy football league is for the day of the draft, knowing, guaranteeing that I get to spend uninhibited time with two of my closest friends. The JT, in the fictitious wedding that I keep talking about where Star Wars is playing as we're walking back down the aisle, JT is one of my groomsmen. And in a pinch, the Kingpin will be... He's right on the edge of would he be if there were six bridesmaids, he would be possibly the sixth groomsman. That's how close I am to these guys. But I don't get to see them much because, as this ridiculous phrase goes, life gets in the way. Because they got jobs, or they got kids, or I got a job, and I got this going on. And it's crazy to stop and think, when you were a kid, when your parents were the people that were driving you around, they dropped you off somewhere, didn't cost a lot of money, you had fun, whatever. And it's funny, I used to rag so bad on the skater kids who had the long Jencos on and that nasty hair. I used to bag on those kids so bad. The kids that would hang out at the Dunkin' Donuts, the kids that would hang out at the gas station outside with their skateboards or their freaking Razor scooters. I used to bag on those kids so bad. But they had no idea how good they had it because their friends were there and it didn't cost a heck of a lot of money. And because I don't drink nearly as much as I used to, and I really was never this guy anyway, I don't have that bar, that Cheers-style bar that I go to, and I know everybody, and everybody knows me. Because I have buddies that do that. They don't even have to send text messages to people to say, hey, man, where you want to go tonight? They just know that they're already going to be there. Now, I will say this. As I have grown older and seen more friends buy houses and do renovations and such, that has become a nice, slightly low-cost alternative. Perfect example, tonight, the beautiful Harden B and her family, they're putting on a little baseball and bratwurst cookout. All for the cost of bring a bottle of wine I probably already had and make some hummus. Oh no, 89 cents for a can of beans. Oh no, 72 cents for some garlic. Oh my god, olive oil I already had. Not overly expensive. You don't have to tip anybody. You're not spending anything more than you already had. No big deal. parties at the house, those are cool. Those are a nice little extra thing right there, you know? I understand, and I've said over and over again, all of the above radio is the overthinker's paradise. And I get pretty overthinky and existential about a lot of things. I'll occasionally step back and say, what is a concert? Why do I spend so much money at them? And then I punch myself in the crotch and say, shut the hell up, you enjoy it. Done. So I understand, I am getting a little overthinky about the time I spend with my friends versus just enjoying it. But I swear in the moment I really am enjoying it. Afterwards, I kind of look over it and analyze it a little bit and say, well, what did I do? I had a good time, I know that. But it does suck. The older we get, the time you spend with people is based more on appointments and dollar values. And truthfully, that's whenever I turn a concert down, part of when I turn concerts down is looking at how much they cost. I will spend any money to go to certain shows and I'll go by myself. But my good buddy Heidi Ackerman of iCream, she said, hey, do you want to see Seether? How much? That much? I don't like them that much. So I just, not only did I turn down the band, I turned down time with a friend because it was too expensive. So there, I'm putting a dollar value on the person and the experience. Now Metallica with Heidi Ackerman of iCream Cafe, I will pay any amount of money for that. That's a big difference. Sweeten the pot with a band I really need to see. Oh my God, I don't give a rat's ass. I will pay it. But it is crazy to know that at some point or another, you are putting a dollar value on your friends. It is crazy. And family, for that matter. I may not go to my family reunion. Why? Because it's going to cost money. And that money might be going to get my wisdom teeth taken out versus getting a freaking plane ticket to Philadelphia. Oh, wait, and taking days off of work. Because time is money. And sadly, we need money.
Verifying credentials. Access granted.
Welcome to the vault. You are listening to the best of all of the above radio.
On your mind, I used to say I wanna die before.
like I was telling you in the first hour, the 21 Pilots show, now that Heathens and Stressed Out and I think Ride is, or Heavy Dirty Soul, I don't remember which. Now that those songs are big on, they're enormous on alternative radio and they're big on pop radio, they've opened up a much bigger crowd of people to check out their music. So now you have a whole bunch of 10, 11, 12, 14, 15, 16-year-olds going to the shows. So the show I was at, the first hour of the show, before we figured out who was actually sitting in what seats, we had a mom and probably about a 12-year-old sitting next to us. And then right in front of us was two probably 16-year-old girls and their parents. And it was funny, the dad, we're sitting up in the 300s, so we're on the third level. But this dad, you could tell he was just the money and the car. He sat at this show with his phone. He was reading a book on a Kindle from his phone, and he had earplugs in. You could tell dad gave zero F's about 21 Pilots. And then behind us, there was a whole bunch of people that were probably 14, 15. The section we were in had so many people below the age of 18, it wasn't even funny. To the point where when we finally got settled in our correct seats, two people that were my age that were there on a date sat down next to Charlotte's Web, and I said, oh my God, people my age, thank God. And they laughed, and they heard what I said. They said, yeah, we feel the same way. So I'll just color in real quick. There was a little bit of a kerfuffle with the seats. We had seats 5 and 6. So I went up the stairs to sit, and there was people sitting in our seats. And I said, hey, those are our seats. I said, well, there's people in our seats right now. I said, okay, no big deal. We'll sit here. So we sat in 1 and 2 for the first 45 minutes. And then people came to sit in seats 1 and 2, so we slid over to 3 and 4. So the minute the people that were sitting in our seats got up, we took their seats. We moved their drinks over. We put their stuff down. And it's funny because they tried to come back to the seats they were sitting in that were not their seats. They were actually about 5 rows up. I can't do nothing for you, man. We paid for these. This is our seats. End of story. So when we got settled, the 3 seats that were empty next to us got filled. So it's a 12-year-old boy, a mom, and a little girl. So this little girl is sitting next to me. So we are in between, I believe John Bellion was the second act. It was Judah and the Lion, John Bellion, and then 21 Pilots. So a full bill. Always appreciate that. And so we're sitting there, and Charlotte's Web and I are chatting, because I'm a veteran to concerts, and now thanks to our recent dates, she's more of one now, even though she did used to go to a lot. And so basically, we kind of set the over-under. Whenever the second band gets off the stage, we set the over-under as to what time we think the headliner is going to take to the stage. And I said, well, 9 o'clock is my hopeful guess, 9:30 is my realistic guess. And it was about 8:40 at this point. And the girl sitting next to me, she very innocently says, my friend was at the Oklahoma City show, or my friend was at the show in Tulsa yesterday, and she said it was an hour wait. And Charlotte's Web and I both just kind of said, ugh, that would suck. And so the girl proceeds to tell me this story. She says, yeah, my good friend, I go to school with her, and her dad thought he bought tickets to the Dallas show tonight. Turns out he accidentally bought tickets to the Tulsa show that was yesterday. I caught it and told her about it, and her dad took her out of school, and they drove to Tulsa, and they saw the show. Otherwise, they would have wasted their money. I said, that was really cool of you, that you're a really good friend. You had a great pair of eyes on that. So here I am thinking, this is going to be the end of the conversation, and Charlotte's Web and I will chat, I'll pee, I'll come back, I'll feel fantastic, ready for the headliner. That didn't happen. So, this girl proceeds to tell me, and now let me just paint the picture. So, there are certain bands that put out a certain kind of a motif, a certain image, a certain outfit. If you were a fan of Limp Bizkit in the late 90s, early 2000s, if you were a fan of Limp Bizkit in the early days, you were probably wearing a pair of Adidas pants, a t-shirt, and a red Nike hat, or a red Yankees hat. If you were a Limp Bizkit fan, you had a red Yankees cap and Adidas pants. End of story. And funny enough, my obsession back when I was about 21 years old was the Limp Bizkit look. I loved the backup dancers and just the trampy chicks in the Limp Bizkit video that wore Adidas pants and sports bras and had a hat on. And I kid you not, my girlfriend at the time, for my birthday, she showed up wearing Adidas pants and a sports bra. If I wasn't such a god-awful boyfriend to her, that would have been, I would have just like fallen over in appreciation. I think I complained about something. I don't remember. I was 21. I was an unhappy person. I'm sorry. But in retrospect, that was a super duper sweet thing. And it was kind of badass. So, the 21 Pilots look is you wear black body paint on your neck and your hands. You wear a long sleeve shirt and you wear a red knit winter cap. And if you're really into it, you wear I think it's red under your eyes. You basically look like somebody who is tired, and not homeless, but somebody who is tired and is weary from travel. And you got a little backpack on, and of course, all of it has the 21 Pilots logo on it. So this girl is decked out, black paint on her hands, black paint on her neck, red hat. She's got the little backpack on. Even when she's sitting in her seat, she's wearing her little backpack that says 21 Pilots on it. So she proceeds to tell me, and I don't remember how we got to this point. This is usually the point where I have to apologize to people because I don't remember how we get to the point. But getting to the meat of the story is what I will give you as opposed to the rest of the lead up. She proceeds to tell me how hot Josh Dunn is, the drummer. She proceeds to say how sexy Tyler Joseph is, the lead singer. And she proceeds to say, he's married, but I would do dirty things to Tyler Joseph. I would cuddle with Josh. I said, okay. And then she says, yeah, Josh is just one of my boyfriends. I have a whole bunch of boyfriends. I said, okay. Okay, and this is how we got to it. Because she proceeds to say, she talks about all of the concerts they come to. She says, we're coming to Iron Maiden in a couple of months. We're seeing this show. I've seen Lady Gaga. And she says, Lady Gaga's my girlfriend. Talks about how she identifies with Lady Gaga. She's a fascinating human being. And she said she felt so much love in the crowd and in the room and in the stadium. And the fact that she's pansexual, she identifies with Lady Gaga. And I was like, whoa, 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 whoa. Hold on, what? She says, oh, no, I'm pansexual. I have boyfriends and girlfriends. I said, okay. And then she proceeds. And so, listen, I'm a little bit guilty. Because I was like, okay, so who are your boyfriends? And she's like, well, Brandon Urie from Panic at the Disco. I was like, oh, yeah, the guy who can't keep his shirt on. She's like, yeah, I would do so much dirty. I'd do dirty things to him six ways to Sunday. And her mother is sitting next to her and says, Jade, will you knock it off? These people don't know you. And she said, it's okay, Mom. They're nice. And so she proceeds to say she's in love with David Bowie. She wants to get a David Bowie tattoo. She's in love with Selena Gomez. She wants to do dirty things to Ariana Grande. And finally, I said to her, so what grade are you in? I'm trying not to ask this child how old she is. I can tell she's young. She's got the multicolor braces And she's young. So I proceed to say, what grade are you? And she's like, oh, I'm a sophomore. I said, oh, so you're like 16? She says, yeah. So she goes even deeper into this conversation about the dirty things she would do. And at no point did I say, what would you do? The fact that she was saying it was more than enough. And then she proceeded to, and at one point, she looks at me and Charlotte's Web. We're holding hands as this girl is talking to us. And she says, are you two together? I said, yeah, a little over 2 years. And she says, that's really cute. Relationships are usually crap. Last relationship I was in lasted 8 months. He took my virginity and then he left. And her mother turned again and said, Jade, put up your filter. You're making... This is reflecting on my parenthood. And the little girl turns to me and says, she's a good mom. I'm just a bad kid. It's okay. And more things like this come out. And she proceeds to say, she at one point calls herself the Pole God. P-U-L-L space G-O-D, Pole God. And I said, what does that mean? She says, I pull bitches. I was at a pep rally not long ago, and I had a girl sitting on my lap the whole time, so somebody called me the pole god, and it stuck. I said, okay. And then, I don't remember, she talked about how much she loved the Walk the Moon concert, but then proceeded to say, yeah, I'm pretty sure everybody in that band is gay. I was like, well, at least the lead singer probably is. And she's like, you know what? That's okay. I turn pages. Get me alone with him. And I said, wait, what? And I looked at Charlotte's Web. I said, I'm going to have to get on Urban Dictionary. And I turned to her mother and I said, Mom, what does your daughter mean when she says she turns pages? And her mother says, it means she can turn them from gay to straight. I was like, oh, she can flip them to the other side of the fence. Oh, my God, I totally get it now. So, all of these moments are coming together in this ridiculous amalgam of discomfort. The only reason I was blushing at this conversation is because a 16-year-old was saying it to me. If it was this girl's 18th birthday, I would have said, here's my card. You are my newest monthly co-host to All of the Above Radio. You have been added to the stable with blonde ambition of my unfiltered crazy women, and I love you for it. But I couldn't do that because she's 16. Couldn't do it. And at one point, she gets this real puffy-chested moment, not physically, just puffy-chested, where she says, where else are you going to find a 16-year-old, pasty white, pansexual girl to tell it like it is? To which I just had to be like, well, pasty white is my favorite. So, I mean, so that's a thing. And it was funny. A couple of more times, the mom said, will you knock it off? Will you stop it? And the girl, and so this girl says, Mom, she's pretty and he's cute. I'm having fun flirting with them. To which later on the drive home, Charlotte's Web said to me, at one point I couldn't tell if she was more interested in you or me. And I straight up said to her, I was like, well, maybe she was trying for the both of us. Now, would that be better if it was in the package of somebody above the age of 16? Of course. But is it hilarious that my girlfriend and I had to question whether or not a 16-year-old was hitting on us? You're damn right. That was one of those moments where we walked away from that situation and we drove away that night and my lovely lady and I just kind of looked at each other and we're just like, And Charlotte's Web said it best. She said, no matter how good of a parent you are, that can still happen. And that's really scary. And it sure is. And I've talked about it on these very airwaves over and over again. However good a parent you are, you could still raise a deviant. You could still have somebody that wants to rebel. No matter how good of a parent you are, you could still raise a 16-year-old pansexual who doesn't care about race, color, creed, or age for that matter. She'll flirt with it all. No matter how good a parent you are, you could still raise Rachel Dolezal. You could still raise a dude that wants to bang a real doll at a brothel in Barcelona. And that's how you bring it full circle, ladies and gentlemen.
This has been All of the Above Radio. It's part music, part talk, full escapism. Saving the world 2 hours at a time since May 2012. Broadcasting live every Tuesday from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. Central on the Fishbowl Radio Network. The best in alternative and indie music and an even better story to tell. For any questions concerning the show, log on to Facebook.com/All of the Above Radio. Follow Hank on Twitter @HankToldYouSo. Or view the show's page on Pinterest. You can also find today's show and all of Hank's favorite shows 24/7 on alloftheaboveradio.com. Or head to iTunes, search All of the Above Radio, download and listen whenever you'd like. Got ADD? No problem. Hit up SoundCloud.com, type All of the Above Radio, and enjoy radio brevity at its finest. Finally, if you'd like to contact Hank or would like to donate via PayPal, the email is alloftheaboveradio@gmail.com. Thank you for listening. May there be a next time. This is the Emperor saying, till next time.
Goodbye!